Hey there, this is Seth Waters from Channel 9 coming to you from the bowels of the Microsoft campus here in Building 10. And today we're going to talk a little bit more about the Windows subsystem for Linux. I have here a special guest. Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, what you do.
I'm Sven Groot. I work on the Windows subsystem for Linux.
That's awesome. So for those that maybe haven't watched before, there's two other videos. We've talked about the general architecture. We've talked about processes. Why don't you give us a quick, like, 30-second overview of how the actual things work, starting from when I click on Bash for Windows.
Okay, so, all right, let's first draw line to designate user mode.
Man, you got some wonderful, you should have been a doctor, dude.
Yeah, I know, people have said that. I am actually a PhD, but.
Well, so I will call you doctor from
they
now.
They don't write prescriptions, unfortunately.
So user mode, kernel mode.
Yes.
Okay.
And we're keeping the user mode portion small because that's not what we're here to talk about. So we've got bash.exe,
uh-huh.
Our wrapper, which talks to the LXSS.
Manager. Okay.
And that ends up talking to the, I'm going to draw a much bigger box here because we're going to fill in that with details. The LXCore.sys driver.
Okay.
And that ends up spawning some actual Linux processes so that you got your real bash and then whatever else you might have up running up here, like ls or sed or
awk or whatever,
gcc or anything. So they talk to this driver as well whenever they invoke system calls.
Okay.
And our driver is basically responsible for translating the Linux system calls into stuff that NT understands.
Okay, so when it comes to the actual, like we said before, when it comes to the actual user mode stuff, once we're past this manager, this is all effectively real Linux.
Yes.
And when it's making calls, it's thinking it's calling real Linux kernel stuff.
Yes.
So here is what we're here to talk about today, which is a little confusing to me, and hopefully you can sort of clarify this. When I'm actually working with files,
mm-hmm.
It thinks it's working with the Linux file system, whatever that is, which is not the same as Windows
mm-hmm.
at all.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about, first of all, what is the Linux file system, if there is one, or how does it abstract the file system? And then how do you take that abstraction and implement it here so that it works with Windows files? Because that's effectively, in the end, what they are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with that. What does the Linux file system look like?
Okay, so Linux file system is based on something called VFS, the virtual file system, which abstracts different file systems like your ext4 or RFS or any kind of file system you use, and some pseudo file systems, I don't know if you want to call them that, like procfs mm-hmm. or tempfs that don't necessarily store stuff on disk. They all get abstracted into a single namespace with consistent functionality. You have the same operations, open, read, write, mm-hmm. stat, on all of these files, regardless of what file system they're in and what disk they may be stored on. So we take those same operations and try to translate them into NT-style file operations.
So that's got to be nice, right? Because I don't know how long ago this happened, but I read somewhere that when they changed over from a certain file system, they said, let's just abstract file systems altogether into a virtual file system. And so now this virtual file system, you have to implement here.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you needed to implement in order to get it to work?
I mean, there's a few basic system calls that might be used. Like we've got stuff like open, stat is a very important one. Then on the actual files, of course, you've got read and write and mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It all kind of goes through those kinds of system calls.
So when those things go down, though, and this is the crazy part, the Linux file system has different data structures, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where do those data structures live? Like, for example, this is going to date me. I remember file allocation table system. They had this big file that said, here's where you need to go for each of the blocks, right? Because these things are stored in contiguous order. Where are those kinds of file structures stored for VHS, for the virtual file system, for example, VFS?
Well, mostly we're kind of a forwarding layer that goes into NT, NTFS, and for things like file allocations, we depend entirely on NTFS.
I see. So when it comes to the actual implementation underneath, the actual writing the ones and zeros, NTFS is doing that.
Yes.
But what you did in LXCore.sys is you implemented certain abstractions to redirect the calls.
Yeah, because if you, we have a, say, system call layer up here that actually just implements these entry points, OpenStat, whatever. And that for file systems doesn't do that much. It mainly just forwards your call to the main VFS component, which is modeled after the way Linux VFS works. So we have inodes and directory entries and file objects that look very similar to the actual Linux counterparts of those. And like the Linux VFS, it works with different file system plugins that can talk to VFS and have different behaviors. And we have a couple of those. We've got two main ones are VolFS and DriveFS. We'll get into details about those pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And then we have a few others like procfs, which are not talking to files on disk, and some others as well. This is kind of the beef of what we're talking about today is VolFS and DriveFS. They both talk to your Windows files underneath. So if we close the box for LXCore there, then we have the actual NT kernel sitting underneath, and they are talking to NT to give you a view of your files. But of course, up here we have inodes, and NT doesn't have any idea of what an inode is. Mm-hmm. There's some information in the inode that NT doesn't necessarily track in the same format or at all. So we have to have a translation between what information NT has and what information NTFS has, and the information that Linux expects us to give for files.
Got it. So let's take a step back. So we know that this virtual file system in Linux is like an abstraction over the actual file systems that are in there. These are different implementations of file systems then? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, so why would we have the need for, you mentioned that this is for interesting stuff, we'll get to this later. Why would we need these two that seem to be linked to actual physical drives? Why do we need two? What is it that they're doing? Why do we need two? What's the purpose of them?
Because we basically have two goals working with files from inside the WSL. We want to give you the full Linux experience with all the different kinds of files you can have there, socket files, FIFOs, symbolic links, all that kind of stuff, case sensitivity, Linux permissions. But we also want you to be able to have interop with your Windows files.
I see.
And that's where the difference lies. VolFS is the one that gives us the full Linux fidelity, and DriveFS is the one that gives us full interop with all of your Windows files.
I see. So if you're inside of the actual bash, the Linux one on the user side, and you want to look at, for example, your project files that you've been working on, because now that you want to work on your Ruby stuff, and it's a little bit easier to do it within the Linux subsystem here, you're saying that if we go through VolFS, that's what directs us to our current directory structure inside of Windows.
DriveFS.
So it's important to get this. So I don't want to get this backwards. So DriveFS is what gives us our directory into Windows.
Yes. So VolFS basically, we have a few VolFS mount points in our system. We have just the root is mounted as VolFS. We have /root, which is the home directory for the root user. and slash home. These are our main full FES mount points. The reason these are separate from the root is when you do Alex run slash uninstall, it will wipe out everything under the root, but in order to not wipe out any of your user files, we don't delete those two root and home mounts. So if you later reinstall, your files are still there.
Got it.
DriveFS, on the other hand, we have like MNT, C, D, E, what have you. All of your fixed NTFS volumes are mounted there. Actually, we also support REFS volumes here.
Interesting.
FAT is not supported at the moment,
yeah,
because of some of the limitations there. But and we only support fixed drives at the moment as well.
And so that's interesting. So now what you're saying is the reason why you actually support two file systems is so that in VolFS you're actually getting a real emulated Linux,
yeah,
full fidelity Linux file system.
Exactly.
And in the DriveFS, you still wanted people to be able to access the files inside of Windows, and so you've added these special directories to add fixed drive support for these kinds,
yeah,
of things. So then the other question that I have is, what's that?
So this is ProcFS. If you're familiar with Linux, you probably know what it is. It is mounted under slash proc, and it is a window into the kernel's internal data structure. So it shows you what processes are running, information about them, about CPU usage, memory usage, files they have open, all that kind of stuff. Similarly, there's slash sys as well, which gives you another bunch of kernel information that you can read and sometimes also modify. There's a few other file systems, like there's C groups and things that have their own file system. So these are all like basically in-memory things that are representations of information the kernel is keeping that are not actual files on disk. So most of those, well, obviously, if we're talking about CPU usage and processes, we have to talk to NT to find out, like, hey, how much CPU has this process been using?
Because I see.
But a lot of it is just internal to our driver because it's all just part of the our emulation, basically.
Okay, so this one then is for the real Linux stuff. This is for, you want to access your Windows stuff, and this is for sort of your process, your kernel stuff.
Yeah.
And that would be, is there like a slash proc or something?
Yeah, so this would be slash proc. And then there's like, so another one that's not using ProcFS, but similar is slash sys, and so.
That's interesting because it seems to me like I'm used to from the Windows side, when I mount a drive, it creates a drive letter. That's,
yeah,
not the case in Linux, right?
No. Linux mounts everything on different directories. Windows can actually also do that, but it's pretty rare that people make use of that. So drive letters don't necessarily exist. We expose the Windows drive letters here because that's how you're used to dealing with your Windows,
sure,
volumes. But internally, like, everything is mounted on a directory.
So then the other question is, as we're going through here, the other question I have is, permissions are a little bit different. Is this something that we take into account, or is everything just running under root?
We do actually have permissions, and you can run under different users as well. There's a difference between root in WSL and being an administrator in Windows, you are still always running under your own Windows user account. You becoming root does not mean you are elevated in the Windows sense necessarily.
I see.
So it like because all of this is actually stored in your app data, local app data, I think,
uh-huh,
and then there's a subdirectory called LXSS.
Uh-huh.
That's where all of these mounts are stored.
I see.
So that's all local to your user. If two people on the same machine are using WSL, they get a completely isolated Linux environment to play with.
I see. So for those that are concerned that, hey, you're running in root inside of bash, you're running effectively root inside of the user scope of Windows.
Yeah.
So there's really no security issue. If you're going to try to do something that's illegal for a user, it won't work.
Yeah. And if you want to, like, if you want to modify some file in your Windows directory through for the DriveFS files, becoming root is not enough. You have to actually launch bash.exe elevated, and then you will have Windows elevated permissions and get that kind of access.
So if you're go onto this machine and you run Bash for Windows, you're like, hey, let me go into mount C users Bill because Bill's been bugging us and we want to take his Word doc. If you are running it as your user, you can't get into that file.
No, even if you are root from the Linux point of view, you still can't get in there. Which is the big difference as well between VolFS and DriveFS. So VolFS pretends it's Linux, basically.
Right.
It's, we store all this extra information, like the owner user ID and group ID of the file, mm-hmm. the mode permission bits, the file type, like is it a socket file or a symbolic link or whatever. This is all stored in extended attributes, which is something that NTFS can store with a file. It has this set of attributes that you can associate with it. So we store all of the extra Linux stuff inside of these extended attributes.
I see. So that was the next question I was going to have. There are certain data structures that exist in VFS which don't exist in the NT kernel. And the way you store those diffs is inside of the file, inside of the NT file system?
Yes.
In extended attributes?
Yeah.
So if you were to go and look at that in Windows and you right-click and you look at properties, you would see all those listed there.
I'm not sure if the properties dialog shows the extended attributes. I don't think it does. This is not entirely the same thing as like the property sheet will show you for a picture, will show you what date taken, but that's taken from somewhere else. I'm not sure if EAs are actually shown by Explorer. And that's also one of the reasons why like you can go here, you can see all of your files in Windows. But if you copy a file from somewhere else into this folder and then go into Bash, you won't see it. Because that file doesn't have the extended attributes on it, so we don't know what to do with it.
Interesting.
And if you go into here and you open a file with Notepad or whatever and try to edit it, a lot of the time text editors, when you save a file, they'll create a new file and replace the old one, which means now the extended attributes are gone, and again, we don't know what to do with the file. So that's why interop is kind of limited in this particular scenario. Whereas here, we don't have extended attributes. Most files in Windows won't have them. We instead try to derive all of that extra information just from Windows information. So we look at your Windows ACLs. What is the effective access that your user has to this file? We try to reconstruct the permission bits from that. So when you type ls, you can see like do I actually have the access to read or write this mm-hmm. file? But there is no Linux permission bits behind that. So we operate under slightly different rules there as well. Like root normally would be able to bypass mm-hmm. most permissions checks, even if the owner of the file isn't root and only the owner has read or write permissions. The root usually can still do all this stuff because it's root.
Right.
But under DriveFS, we say Linux root is not Windows elevated. So DriveFS tells you this is your Windows permissions. And if you don't have the ability to open a file from Windows, you would not have the ability to open it from Linux, even if you are root, if you're under here.
But here, you are always root, which is effectively your app data local LXSS, which is okay.
So here, under here, we support chmod. We'll update all the permission bits inside the extended attributes. So there you can just go and say like, okay, I'm creating a file as a certain user and I'm going to set permissions on it and then I'm going to switch to a different Linux user and now I can't access it according to normal Linux rules of accessing files. Whereas under DriveFS, we don't support chmod, we don't support chown, we always just report what Windows thinks the access to your file is. If you want to change it, you have to go through Windows.
Got it. So then the next question I have is, and this is a question I've asked already on the process side and maybe on some of the general side, is there's obviously a set of things that you have implemented already for the file system, but there's maybe a set of things that are questionable that may or may not work exactly the same way you expect on Linux. Is that the case for certain things here?
Yes. Like I said, on VolFS, we try to be as close to Linux as possible. As far as I know, like the only thing we really don't support right now is creating device files.
Okay.
Every other type of file we have, this may or may not already be in the public field, but if not, it's coming. Mm-hmm. So we have Unix sockets support, we have FIFO support, we have symbolic links, which can point anywhere. We have full case sensitivity. NTFS has actually always been able to do case sensitive. It's just turned off in Windows.
Nice.
So we enable it when we talk to the VolFS mount.
Got it.
When we talk to DriveFS, we have symbolic links. They're done in a slightly different way than in VolFS, and obviously they don't work if you look at them from Windows. But from inside of Bash, you will be able to use symbolic links under DriveFS. Mm-hmm. But other types of files, we have no way of representing them in Windows, so we don't allow you to create them.
I see.
We are case preserving, as Windows is there, but we are not case sensitive, at least not currently. We're looking at ways of improving that because we've heard a lot of feedback from people saying, hey, we really want case sensitivity, even on our DriveFS mounts. But we're trying to make that work properly with the Windows side of things.
So as you're looking at this and people are giving you feedback on sort of the forums, what do you see this marching towards? Are we just going to take this and perfect it? Can you perfect it? Are we going to consider adding perhaps other file systems onto it? What do you think?
I think what you will see is that hopefully VolFS and DriveFS will get closer and closer in functionality, so more and more of your Linux abilities will be available, even if you're working with interop. So maybe at some point we won't need to have this restriction that, hey, if you try to do interop inside here, it will break things.
Got it. And that's an interesting problem, right? Because in the when I was doing Linux stuff, I put everything here.
Yes, exactly. And that's a normal thing for people to want to do. They want to put stuff in their Linux home folder, and then they find, I try to use it from Windows, if they can even find where it's stored, then, which people, of course, were quite quick to figure out online. So, but if you do stuff from it from Windows, then files will disappear or things will become inconsistent because we do some of the stuff we need from Windows to fill in the inode structure. It's a bit longer to figure out than it would on Linux, so we cache some of this information. So the other problem you have is if you try to do interop in here is that the cache becomes inconsistent. So things start becoming weird and broken once you try to, like, do anything with a Windows process in here, especially if you do it while Bash is running. And that's unfortunate because if the only thing we can do right now is tell people instead go to your MNT/C and store it somewhere there, but then you don't have all of those nice Linux features that people want.
So we're
trying to, like, bridge that gap, make our interop story even better.
And that's pretty cool, right? Because if I'm a developer, right, and let's just say I'm doing Ruby on Rails, I'm going to go home /projects and then /and then do my thing in there. What's your suggestion for people right now that want to do that, that want to be able to still look at these files inside of Windows? Do we to put, like, some symbolic link to something on this mount, or what is it that we do?
I mean, you could put a symbolic link there if you just want to pretend you're in your home directory, basically. But it's still, the symbolic link is going to point to a DriveFS mount, so it's going to have those same limitations.
Got it.
If there's, at the moment, some reason, like, you need some feature that VolFS has that DriveFS doesn't, right now, unfortunately, you're kind of stuck. You have to work inside of your home directory. And if you want to, basically the best thing you can do if you want to work with these files from Windows is copy them back and forth.
Yeah.
Because if you are inside of Bash and you copy a file from MNTC into your home directory, we will add all of the information we need. We'll add your extended attributes so that after that you can do chmod on that file inside of your home directory. But then if you want to edit it, you'd have to copy it back out and edit it here and copy it back in to make sure that
Or we could add a git remote and push it up and pull it down, right?
Yeah, basically.
I mean, that should do it. So where can people go to find out more about this particular thing? Because this is very interesting, right? I mean, originally my thought was, oh, you're redirecting calls to the NTFS, which is not true, right? Because you're trying to emulate Linux, you're trying to maintain integrity with Windows, and you're also trying to look at things from a Linux perspective on the internal kernel system workings, right? So it's a little more complicated than that. So
once you get to this layer, that's where we are redirecting calls into NTFS, but we add some extra stuff to pretend we're Linux, basically.
Yeah. And that's cool, right? And then as we finish up, where can people go to sort of find out more about this?
There will be a blog post describing all of this in more detail.
And that's awesome. And then one more thing that just hit me in the head. You mentioned caching, because I read a long time ago there's a special data structure called a dentry or directory entry that's literally doing a lot of string manipulations and then keeping a lot of stuff in cache, right? You mentioned cache. What kind of stuff are you caching in lxcore.sys other than the dentry perhaps object? What kind of things are in cache that might screw up if you do some funny things back and forth?
It is mainly just the directory entries that we are caching for VolFS. For DriveFS, we don't keep anything cached because we assume anyone can go and change this from Windows. But for VolFS, we keep a directory entry cached to speed up our lookups, to speed up determining all of this information, so we don't have to read the extended attributes every time you try to touch a file. So in that sense, we're pretty similar to how Linux does things. We just disable that cache when you go to DriveFS so we can keep that interop working.
Nice. Well, this is really interesting. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. We've been learning about the Windows subsystem for Linux, particularly the file system, how it works and where it is. Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.